What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
I always liked the idea of getting the younger guys up there quick and just getting their feet wet into professional baseball and keeping them there and just seeing how things go.
Hey, here we go. It is Hot Sheet, the first one of 2025. Scotty Braun, along with Baseball America's JJ Cooper and Jacob Rudner. Very excited to be here. If you're here for the first time, welcome. Also, big guest joining us, Jack Caglione, who comes from the University of Florida, first round pick, sixth overall to the Kansas City Royals, joining us in about 10 minutes. Before that, and before we even get to the first topic, JJ Cooper, congratulations on being eligible to vote for the Hall of Fame and welcoming the scrutiny with a smile on your face. So I'm not going to reveal much because people can click into your article on Baseball America about how you explained your first ever ballot. But any last words before people go nuts about who you voted for?
The great thing about the Hall of Fame vote is that everyone really agrees with your decisions and is very appreciative of the thought process. And there's no disagreements and no controversy in any way about Hall of Fame voting.
That's what right. I really enjoy. You said it with a straight face. And at least you have Jacob and me on your side. I don't know about everyone else, but yeah, we're with you. Most others probably will have a gripe, but that's why it's all good. I will mention Brian McCann's on his list. So have fun with that. You'll see plenty in the comments. And I want to let everyone know, quick programming note, Hot Sheet's going to air every other week until pitchers and catchers report. We'll go back to weekly shows beginning February 17th. Let's get back to school. This was so big, we covered it at length on Foul Territory today as well. Jacob, tons of changes potentially on the horizon in the college baseball world. I'll just let you run with what you're seeing, what you believe will definitely happen, and your thoughts on how it'll affect the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the biggest things that came out of the ABCA convention this past week were the roster rule changes, where the ABCA membership put together a proposal that they're going to take to the Power Four commissioners, in which they're going to say, hey, we think that we need 38 players as the limit for fall rosters, and then we're going to trim down to 34 by December 1st. To me, that was the biggest thing. Now, do remember, 38 is not yet a rule. It is just merely a proposal. In a lot of the conversations I've had with NCAA administrators and coaches, there is some belief that that number is actually going to settle at 36, but we don't know quite yet. And to me, that was the biggest thing. Other than that, some smaller rule changes, double first base bag, probably going to be seen a lot more widespread and certainly seen in the Division I tournament this year. There's going to be more regular sticky, tacky stuff, checks, which I'm sure we're going to talk about a little bit more here throughout the regular season from umpires and a couple other things along those lines in terms of smaller tweaks to the game at the college level. But to me, the biggest things are those roster limits, the crackdown on the foreign substance checks with pitchers, and that double first base bag, which will appear for the first time with more consistency in 2025.
I'm going to add to that. And what I'm going to add is that a lot of this, there's also a lot of these changes, especially when we talk about 38, 34, you know, what that number is going to be. There is a lot of uncertainty, but there's also a lot of fear of lawsuits, I would say, is a key part of this that we heard at the ABCA convention, because we just saw this. Obviously, it's a football lawsuit, but we just saw the Vanderbilt quarterback basically filed suit and was granted an injunction that gave him extra, another year of eligibility, basically said the JUCO year, the junior college years didn't count. That's obviously important. That applies. There's a lot that's coming out of that. But I would say also with that, college coaches are really afraid. They do not want mid-year transfers. They do not want rosters being shaken up where players are transferring in December into January, where there's a lot of that uncertainty right before the season starts. And there is a fear here. There is a concern among coaches that at some point, someone who is one of those, when 38 went to 34, someone is going to sue, and that's going to lead to mid-year transfers, Jacob. Do you think that that's a realistic fear that these coaches have?
I do. And the reality is all it takes is one. You and I saw some math that was presented by the ABCA during that rules conversation where they associated the amount of cuts with how many players would end up in the transfer portal potentially. At 38, you're looking at 1,200 mid-year transfer portal entrants. And all it takes is one of those student athletes to feel disgruntled by their situation and they or their parents decide to take it to court. And the reality is this, the NCAA's track record in court cases right now is not very good. They tend to lose those battles. And really, if one athlete feels as though the rules have put them in an unfair situation, it takes one court decision to undo a lot of the progress that baseball feels as though it's making. With a player victory over the NCAA, coaches feel as though they're going to lose a lot of the power to kind of set their own rules and make decisions for themselves as a sport. And I do think it's very realistic without protection, with something like a mid-year transfer portal window, which, as you said, they don't want, or some sort of taxi squad, which allows them to not make cuts mid-year and rather keep those guys off the roster, but not necessarily in a playing role.
All right, let's bring in D-Rod. Will there be – this is a question from D-Rod. Will there be more injuries to arms if substances are not available? JJ?
Okay. Rosin still allowed. This is where the sticky versus tacky. If your fingers are a little too tacky, they'll ask you to wipe it off with a towel, right? If it's too sticky, that's a different story. If you're talking about that you've got some combo of some kind of sunscreen in rosin, or you've got some kind of concoction that you've whipped up or someone has whipped up and you're basically slathering on somewhere on your belt or somewhere, that is going to be, when you talk about injuries with that, I know that there are major league pitchers who have said that that caused problems for them. I will also say with this, that's against the rules. The reality of it is that you're not supposed to use something that basically allows you to get an extra 250 RPMs on your slider. And so there is more of a crackdown this year. I can't tell you whether that's going to lead to more injuries. I know you have we had major league pitchers who say that they do have worries that caused injuries for them. But that being said, it's always been against the rules. Now they're just enforcing them.
Jacob, you want to jump in on anything else, before we get to our guest here that you think will have a major impact?
Yeah, I would just add to what JJ just said. I think that college coaches right now are very injury conscious. It's something that's on their mind, especially with these new roster limits. 34 is something that scares them, particularly because of injuries. And even still, a lot of the coaches that I've had a conversation with have voiced support for this sticky stuff crackdown that we're going to see a lot more of this season. So will it lead to more injuries? I'm not so sure, but I can tell you that, coaches are not so fearful that it will. And they believe that for the health of the game, there does need to be more checking and kind of a rules enforcement when it comes to making sure that pitchers are not helping themselves out. And like JJ said, adding 250 RPM to your slider.
Could I just jump in one more thing I wanted to add that we mentioned the double bags earlier a little bit. We're going to see more of that, in college baseball this year. We've seen this now being approved for the postseason in college baseball this year. I think this is going to be something that, there are some people who are just going to pull their hair out over it because it's obviously different. But at the same time, it also is something we're seeing double bags, and we're also seeing at least the conversation about maybe in the 12th inning you see the Manfred man, which it won't be the Manfred man in college baseball. But, hey, they just don't want 18-inning games in college baseball. So it may be that we see something. It's not happened yet, but there is a conversation that maybe in the 10th and 11th you play extra innings like normal, and in the 12th you get the ghost runner on second to try to make sure that games don't go 15, 16, 17, 18 innings.
Yeah, ghost runner sounds good. Also, I'm like, if they do it in MLB in the 10th, I'm like, can we do it in the 10th inning in college? Do we have to wait until the 12th? I don't know. And I'm for the double bags. I like the roster size getting a little tightened up. AJ Pierzynski had a whole rant on foul territory about how way too many players were getting cut in fall ball and then being a mess with their situation, and they're just kids. So I'm with you there. All right, let's transition to a future big leaguer now in the pros. Let's bring him in. Jack Caglione is joining us right now on Baseball America Hot Sheet. Jack, great to have you on, man. How's your offseason been?
It's been great. I haven't really had this much downtime in a long time. So figuring out what to do with my free time has been a challenge, but definitely enjoying it.
Right. So you go from playing at the University of Florida, obviously get drafted super high up, sixth overall, to Kansas City. Why is the offseason quieter? Is it because the college regimen is so rigorous and kind of everything is scheduled out for you and now you get to kind of build your own time?
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I'd just honestly say that it's a longer period. You know, it's not as – it's a lot longer than winter break was in Gainesville. So I'm at that point where all my buddies are heading back to college right now and I'm still home for the next few weeks.
Jack, thanks for joining us. So what is your offseason? What's kind of your to-do list this offseason, your first pro offseason? What do you hope to – when you show up, you know, in Surprise, what do you hope to be – a little bit further along on than you were when you ended your first little taste of pro ball?
Yeah, for me, the biggest thing that I've been focusing on is just shrinking the zone, you know, really working on my strengths and knowing who I am as a hitter. Have kind of just been the biggest things. You know, I'm not somebody that's going to go down that winding road of figuring out everything you need to work on. You know, baseball's a game of imperfections, so I know that, and I know that if I just focus on one thing at a time and perfect one thing at a time, the better off I'll be.
Jack, one thing that, you know, you and I have had plenty of conversations about throughout your college tenure was just the transition that was going to happen with pro ball and your status as a two-way player. What are some of the things you're working on this offseason in terms of playing both ways, whether it's pitching or hitting, and how has that gone? What's the outlook for next season?
Yeah, for me, it's just been keeping my arm moving. I'm just, you know, still doing the whole long toss, doing my arm care, and just staying ready for the opportunity.
All right. So, Jack, take me through life as a pitcher as well. Like, what's the future here?
That's a great question. something that we've talked about a lot as a organization as well as my family. And it's just one of those things where you kind of just need to see what happens. Can't really talk too much about anything. So,
Jack, what are your thoughts about college baseball not banning the shift? I remember last year in Omaha, you had some comments about just how the shift was not fair to left-handed hitters like yourself. Where do you stand on that issue? And do you think it should be banned? What's your stance?
You see, the pitching side of me loves it. You know, it's great. But the offensive side, I mean, for me, this past year in Gainesville, it wasn't very fun seeing four outfielders out there. It wasn't very fun seeing the second baseman playing short right field. So as a hitter, which I'm going to take that over the pitching side of things, I'm not on it at all. I think it should just be straight up and, you know, make better pitches, you know, at the end of the day.
Jack, kind of talking about your college career, you know, a ton of home runs, one of the best two-way players we've seen in quite a while. But the other thing that stands out is I feel like you were in college baseball at one of the most significant, one of the most important times in college baseball that we've had. So much changed. Like, if you just look at from when you were a high school senior getting ready to go into college baseball to where it is now, you know, what was the biggest change, you know, in your mind? And kind of, do you think it's in a better place now? Or are there some things that you think also, is there goods and bad, you know, of kind of a lot of the changes? How do you kind of perceive it as someone who went through it?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I got no problems by any means with the whole NIL side of things. I think players should be getting paid for all the hard work that they're doing and boosting, you know, the university's kind of status. I think it's been a long time coming. I think it's a great thing for the sport. I think it's going to be interesting, especially, you know, before they switch to the revenue sharing type of things. It's going to definitely kind of tip the scale one way or the other. The more Power 5 schools, I think you're going to take more advantage of it. But for me, I'm all for it. As a high school senior going into college, it's going to seem like a whirlwind. But, you know, as long as you just stay focused on the whole baseball side of things, all that stuff will kind of come.
Jack, what do you think about the talent level in college baseball that you were able to face and how that was able to get you ready for some of the stuff that you've seen in your taste of pro ball so far, just the caliber of players?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I wanted to play in the SEC and why I wanted to play for the Gators. SEC baseball, I'm obviously very biased, but I think it's by far the best conference in college baseball. You know, you got just super talented rosters from top to bottom. And it seems like every team has two or three really, really good arms that you're going to see that way down the road in your career in the professional side of things. For me, it also kind of helped being able to be coached by such great coaches and kind of helped me shape who I am today has been amazing. But yeah, being in the big environments and going and playing in front of, you know, 8,000 to 20,000 people and however many there were in Omaha was, you know, something that was like, I'll never forget. And I'm super thankful for it.
That kind of leads me into asking now, looking at your pro career, looking at, you know, now your time as a Royal, obviously the Royals, you know, great season last year, make it to the postseason. And I also look from your standpoint, you've got teammates that you played with in college who kind of have shown the path. I mean, Wyatt Langford, I think it was an hour and a half, I feel like, and boom, we're watching him, you know, playing in the big leagues. Paul Skeens, who obviously you saw turn around, boom, he's in the big leagues. Do you look at it like now, like, okay, as you head into your first full pro season, the timetables are a little different, I feel like, now than they were a generation ago, kind of maybe partly because coming out of college programs where you're seeing top level talent, you know, kind of game in, game out. Do you even think about that yet? Or is that something like as you go into your first pro season, it's like, okay, I know that there's the opportunity is there to move pretty quickly.
Yeah. I mean, it's the opportunity is always going to be there. It's comes down to how hard are you willing to work for it, you know? So for me, seeing somebody like Wyatt kind of blow through the system, I was like, all right, he deserves everything that he'll ever, you know, come across in his career. He's going to be there for a very long time. He's going to put up amazing numbers. That's just the person he is. If you knew Wyatt, he's going to be the hardest working person in the room. He's going to be pushing you to be better. And that's why, I mean, it wasn't really a surprise to any of us in Gainesville that he was going to be up there as quick as he was. And obviously with Skeens too, he's just, you know, they're just kind of the freaks of that class. And you knew that they weren't going to be down there too long. They're way too talented to just kind of be in the minor leagues, and it's paying off well for the Pirates and for the Rangers. And, you know, I always liked the idea of getting the younger guys up there quick and just getting their feet wet into professional baseball and keeping them there and just seeing how things go.
Jack, now there's another pretty good role model within the organization that I don't know if you've spoken to yet, but if not, maybe you can become best friends with Bobby Witt Jr. Super nice guy, known him for years, humble as hell, talented as can be, brought the team to the playoffs, got the big contract. Have you had conversations with him? And if so, what'd you guys talk about?
When spring training arrives, major league teams know that they have to have depth. They have to have contingency plans. No major league team goes into the season planning to have five starters make all the starts. Being prepared for life and life's events is even more important, which is why I have life insurance through SelectQuote to protect my family's financial future. SelectQuote is one of America's leading insurance brokers with nearly 40 years of experience, helping over 2 million customers, including me, find over $700 billion in coverage since 1985. Other life insurance brokers offer impersonal, one-size-fits-all policies that cost you more and cover you less. While SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents work for you to tailor a life insurance policy for your individual needs in as little as 15 minutes. You invest so much time to take care of yourself and to be the healthiest, best version of you. SelectQuote's exclusive policies can reward that effort. If you're in good health, they work with carriers that can give you the same-day coverage for up to $5 million with no medical exam required. And these policies are more affordable than you think. You can get coverage for up to $1 million for as little as $20 per month. Head to SelectQuote.com and a licensed insurance agent will call you right away with the right policy for your life and your budget. SelectQuote. They shop, you save. Get the right life insurance for you for less at SelectQuote.com/BA. Go to SelectQuote.com/BA today to get started. That's SelectQuote.com/BA.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Yeah, Bobby was the first person to reach out to me once I got picked up, which was really cool. You know, it kind of just shows a lot about who he is as a player. But all the guys that are up with the big league team, they were super welcoming. You know, got a bunch of texts and still talk to Vinny's a big one that I talked to a good bit. And I'm super excited to get out back in Arizona and kind of see them again and hopefully share the field with them at some point, take some ground balls and pick Vinny's mind through stuff. But it's been nothing but great. I mean, Bobby's awesome. I met him in Kansas City, and he just seems like such a laid back dude, but you know that, you know, he's probably the biggest competitor out there on the field. So I'm super excited to get up there as fast as possible.
You mentioned tightening up the zone earlier. What are some of the things that you're looking to take from some of those guys in terms of being able to kind of teach you swing decisions and how to kind of better go about those things? Have you had conversations with anybody yet about that, you know, future teammates?
We haven't really dove into that too much. I was going to wait more kind of in person and be face-to-face in the cages and kind of pick their brains. But for me, it's just been an off-season thing. You know, whether I'm hitting off a machine or I'm hitting BP off an arm, just being really, really picky and knowing what I can drive and sticking to that. And it's been helping a lot, and I'm feeling like I'm in a really good spot.
Have you spoken to the Royals about timetable? I know, you know, some teams at least try to put goals up there. I'm sure in your mind, like you said, you want to just get up to the big leagues as quickly as possible, but just kind of a plan in place, like, hey, if everything works out, you're playing well, you're on the field, this is what the progression would look like for you in your first full season here coming up?
No, to be honest with you, we haven't really dove into that just yet. They're just focused on getting you this first full season under your belt, you know, seeing how that goes and, you know, building from there. I'm not expecting anything. I just know that I'll put the work in and, you know, God has a plan.
Love it. Well, Jack, thank you so much for joining us. Great to talk to you here in the off season. Excited to see you in spring training. Enjoy the rest of the time. Okay.
Awesome. Appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Appreciate you. Jack Caglione.
Hey, Jack.
First round pick this past MLB draft back in 2024, sixth overall to the Kansas City Royals. JJ, that's a hell of a talent that you guys got to watch, obviously, in the college world, immediately looking like a, you know, success here in the pros, including in the Arizona Fall League.
And it's seeing the power, obviously, that's something that just stands out. Like you look at the Royals, and over the years, that's been kind of one of the things that they've been more kind of they've had the speed merchants. They've had some guys who can have some power, but Jack is a guy who obviously, if it all clicks, it could be challenging for home run titles. And they haven't had a whole lot of those guys until someone like, you know, they've got Salvador Perez, they've got Bobby Witt Jr. So it is something where you look at it now and you go, okay, he could move pretty quick, especially the thing you wanted to hear, working on tightening up those swing decisions. That's kind of, if there was a concern, if there's a question, you know, we'll see. Like you said, he's now going to be facing, he's going to be not having to worry about a fourth outfielder anymore, which might be really beneficial for Jack because he is a left-handed pull hitter. And that's something that college baseball, you can do that. Now the infielders got to keep their feet in the dirt. That's going to be an advantage for him.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jacob, thanks for the time, man. Good to talk to you. Obviously a lot of good college talk, big picture talk. So we'll catch you again soon. Okay.
Appreciate you guys.
Appreciate you. All right, so Carlos Collazo is about to join us here, and he put together an article that I know you guys do all the time on Baseball America, JJ, but I love looking back at how things played out with trades and how things played out with drafts, because we get so in-depth on draft day, and of course leading up to it, and Baseball America does year-round, but I always want to make sure that we do look back. We don't spend too much time kind of getting away from that draft, but if that makes sense, like, you want to find the sweet spot. And to me, that five-ish year point is there. We're in 2025. We're about to look back at the 2020 draft. Go ahead. You got something before we bring them in?
No, I was just going to say, that's exactly right. Like, if you look at it now, we are now far enough away from the 2020 draft to have a decent sense of how this shapes up. Now, there are going to be guys who look great now, and we're going to end up, unfortunately, they're going to, you know, they're staying power is going to be pretty brief. There's going to be other guys who haven't really popped yet, and they're going to kind of rise up. We will see a little bit of that. But when you look at the exercise of kind of doing a redraft, when you hear these names, it's not going to be like something where you go, oh, so these are guys who we don't have any clue about yet. No, these are guys who, in a lot of cases, we already have a very good idea.
Yeah, even if they were high schoolers at this point, you get a good idea of what's going on. So let's hit Helium Spot for Carlos Collazo joining us now. All right, Carlos, great article on the 2020 redraft. It was a weird year, of course. That was right in the thick of the pandemic. We went from 40 rounds. I remember when I was like, oh, they're going to cut the draft. Okay, that makes sense. Down to five yeah. rounds, which of course opens up the opportunity for undrafted guys to thrive, which I noticed Cade Smith in there, which was awesome for me to see. But anyway, first off, just give us how you put this together and some standout moments from it.
Yeah, well, like you guys were talking about, I feel like it's really useful just to do a redraft and kind of assess how we did as an industry, how we did at Baseball America. I mean, it's a little trickier for us. We're not putting out like a specific list that we think that's different from the industry. We're really trying to capture what the industry is doing. But this 2020 redraft, it's going to be one that is just a weird class because of the COVID year. I think there are some lessons that you can learn from this draft class. Most importantly, like, things change really rapidly at the amateur level in just a few months of college ball. Players like Spencer Strider, who was coming off an injury and didn't throw a ton and missed a season at Clemson. He goes from a guy who's drafted in the back of this five-round draft to, I would say, like, it's Strider or Garrett Crochet are the clear 1-1 choices in this draft compared to 2019, the redraft we did a year ago for that class. This class is shaken up. There's not a single player who's taken inside the top 10 who appears inside the top 10 on this redraft. 2019, we had Adley Rutschman and Bobby Witt Jr. 1 and 2. I think at the time we had the sense that this class was going to be a little bit dicey moving forward, just given the constraints we had, given the lack of looks that scouts were able to get on these players. There's just so much uncertainty. And you certainly see that 5 years later. I think there is some room to argue, like, the specific order of players once you get beyond the Strider and the Crochet at the very top. But this class is also driven on the hitting side by players that carry a lot of value defensively. Guys like Mason Wynn, Patrick Bailey, they're not like legitimate middle of the order hitters yet. Maybe they'll become that, but they carry a lot of value by playing premium positions up the middle and doing a lot with the glove. So it is not a class that looks great in hindsight, although teams like the Braves, Giants, Pirates, they certainly had good drafts that are looking pretty bang on.
I probably think too much about stuff like this, but I don't ever want to go back through 2020 again, and I don't ever want to have a five-round draft again. But that being said, that was a fascinating kind of almost experiment in some ways, because what you just said, like, when we say, okay, how important is that draft year, the looks, the data, everything that is gathered during the final year, the final spring, basically, before a player is drafted? Well, what happens if you essentially cut that off? And what happens is you get a lot more misses. Now, I don't want to say that is 100% because of that, because we've had other drafts where you look at it and go, oh, you know, if you flip through that 2015 draft, I think it is, and you're like, man, there's a lot of misses at the top of this draft. It happens some years. But the 2020 draft is one where you look at it and you look at that top five, and none of them would be consideration for top five now, just five years later. And I think a lot of that is we didn't really get a chance for players to sort themselves out, for scouts to get that those necessary additional looks, and really even do a lot of the kind of makeup stuff and all as well. Because, again, a lot of this just really got shut down before the draft in a way that we don't normally see. You know, and Carlos, Evan Carter, you know, who is another one who kind of stands out from this as a guy who basically was almost unseen by a lot of teams, that was seen as kind of like the shocking pick of the draft at the time. And you look at it now and you're like, wow, that was a really astute pick. But that was also kind of a scouting find in some ways, wasn't it?
100% it was. I remember at the time the Rangers had a draft that really confused a lot of scouts, a lot of different teams at the time, because Evan Carter was the shocking pick. He was kind of the big surprise. But really, that entire draft class, I got a lot of feedback immediately after the fact. It was like, yeah, they really kind of went off the board this year. And I think the Rangers really, they're proud of the fact that they're not really going based on the consensus. I mean, none of the teams really are doing it that way, but they very much value the looks that their scouts have. They felt really confident in the looks they got, specifically on Evan Carter, who is not a high profile name. He's not a guy that we had in the BA 500. That was a miss. We would have loved to have him. Mr. Strider, another guy, would have loved to have a little bit higher. But I think when you have a situation where you're relying on less performance data and you have less of the building blocks that your models are creating, being able to trust and value the scout looks that you're getting is going to lead to advantages, and it's going to lead to great values, like in Evan Carter, who goes from a player that a lot of people didn't know about. A lot of people certainly didn't expect to go in that range. And now he looks like a top 10 player in hindsight. So it really just shows the difference you can make as a scout for a team who values those scouting looks.
It is everything. Okay. That's why Baseball America exists. It is everything. If Evan Carter doesn't get picked by the Rangers there and everyone's giving crap for it, they might not win the World Series. And there's also in your top 30, the Orioles got Mayo, Kerstad, right? I know, obviously, you know, in the redraft, it's Crochet, but also Westberg's in that top 30 for the Dodgers. You know, Bobby Miller was really good 2 years ago, had a bad year this past season. Gavin Stone looks like he's going to be good. Landon Knack's been useful for them. Those are guys that all popped up in that draft that they found with gems. And also, we're talking about, say, the Dodgers, for example, they never get to pick towards the top of the draft. So anyway, they have certainly nailed it. But JJ, this plays to the point of the other article that's popped up recently on Baseball America. Obviously, here it is. There is what appears to be a lot of fear that amateur scouts are going to start getting cut around the game. And that's what's leading to this conversation. So go ahead, tell us how bad this could be.
Yeah, so this is a great idea by Carlos to basically just kind of reach out, and we asked scouts, we gave them anonymity because obviously these are kind of the questions we're asking are not ones that they can really publicly proclaim about. But we just asked kind of what are you feeling? What is your state? What is your thoughts on the state of the industry? What are your thoughts about your personal, you know, situation? And Carlos, I don't know another way to describe it other than it was pretty bleak.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's kind of how this piece came about. Is every offseason has a lot of transition scouting. A lot of these guys are on 1 or 2 year deals. They run out at the end of the season. So there's lots of turnover. But this year, more than any other year I can remember, and it's only been 8 or 9 years for me working at Baseball America, I had a lot of scouts say, you know, this is the worst offseason we've ever had. There were a lot of teams, a lot of large market teams who were just cutting more positions than normal, and really just a lot of fear that I noticed in my conversation with scouts throughout the industry. So I wanted to just get a better pulse of what these guys were thinking, what they thought about the state of the industry, what they thought of it moving forward, get a sense of, like, we have our perceptions of which teams do this well on a scouting level, which teams identify talent well, but I really wanted to get a sense of what the scouts themselves thought. And I think more than, like, we have some quantifiable numbers. We ask scouts to rate, like, how they're viewing things on a 1 to 5 scale. I think that's informative, but we also just got a lot of feedback from these guys on just the context of the industry now, how they viewed themselves within their organizations. I feel like a lot of their comments are really informative, and they definitely don't paint a really exciting, positive, optimistic outlook for scouting moving forward. I mean, the bulk of these respondents are amateur scouts specifically. I think for several years now, we've seen a lot of pro scouts being cut. We're starting to see that happen more on the amateur side. And I think as you go further and further away from the big leagues, scouts in general are more valued because you have to project and you can't rely on some of the data that we have at the upper levels of the minors and throughout college. But really, it was an eye-opening process for me. I would encourage you guys to all go look at it. It's free on the site. A lot of this stuff is typically behind the paywall. But I wanted really as many people as possible to see it. And it's useful. It's informative. It helps me do my job better. And unfortunately, I don't think it's the most happy times in the scouting industry right now.
I've been running this by a couple of people, you know, in baseball recently. And the thing that the best way I can describe it, this has always been somewhat true, but we are kind of reaching a point now in baseball where it used to be kind of that you could make that deal where if you were a baseball lifer, you gave up a lot. You traveled a lot. Your pay wasn't great. But there was that opportunity if you said, I want my life to be baseball, that you could stay in the game, you know, the pro game for years, right? You could be a coach. You might bounce around, whatever. Now it's much more, I think, I feel like it's much more designed for efficiency. And I mean that in a way where you see a whole lot of people come in their 20s for low pay. And the general idea is most of them won't be in baseball 5 years from now, because they'll be replaced by the next group of young, fresh into baseball. A few will make it out of that. A few will make it to 10 years, to 15, to 20, but it's a very small number. So for everyone that makes it, there's going to be a whole lot who had a couple of years in baseball before they were cycled out for the next group. The video analysts, the video scouts, those kind of jobs, they're designed almost to be temporary in a way that really didn't exist, I would say, 15, 20, 25 years ago, Carlos.
Yeah. And I think the one other point I want to make here, just in closing, is there's a lot of talk about scouting versus analytics or scouting versus data. It's one or the other. We asked just straight up, like, how has video analytics and new data helped or hurt you as a scout? And I think what was interesting to me, and you know this if you talk to scouts regularly, is these guys are really curious. They want to use these new tools. They're not against data by and large. Like, there are a lot of comments about scouts understanding that there's a place for this, and they have sharpened their skills as scouts and evaluators because of the new tools that they have available. And I think you see in the results that the teams that are using both, that are finding ways to value the humans that are working for their teams and value their opinions and their expertise that's been developed over years and years alongside all this new data and tech, you can do both. And I think the solution for most teams who have success is to do both. Organizations like the Dodgers and the Padres and the Rays came out really well in terms of like how our scouts who participated in this survey saw them. And it's only 27 scouts who participated. So it's not like a study canvassing every single scout, but I do think it does create a useful picture of scouts and even the older veteran scouts. Like, a lot of these guys are really excited to learn and they're excited using these new tools. So just because you're an older scout who's been around the block does not mean you're anti-data, anti-analytics. You can do both. A lot of these guys want to do both. I think they just want to feel valued in their jobs.
I'll sum it up here in my mind, because I obviously really like to follow the business side of baseball and what ownership groups do. This will be a very easy way for some of the smarter owners in baseball, whether it's a big market team, a small market team, big spender or not, to say, you know what, we're not going to go with the rest of the pack here. We're going to make sure we have this advantage, because this whole department in general does not really cost much in the grand scheme of baseball. And if it makes one difference on one player for us, it can change the entire complexion of our franchise. And we know it will do that. It will do more, much more gain than it will hurt if we're just relying on video and stats and data tools. So something to keep in mind, some teams will go against the grain and they will thrive. That is a guarantee, that's a lock. So anyway, it's not the end of this combo. Make sure you check out, like Carlos said, that article on Baseball America. We are not back next week, but we will be every other week leading up to pitchers and catchers. Yes, 2 weeks from now, then every week during the season. Thanks for checking out Baseball America Hot Sheet, first one of 2025, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Wow, what's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.